afternoon, America. Welcome to the Inside Scoop. This is your host, Mark Levine, former congressional attorney, giving you the Inside Scoop from Washington, D.C. Here we bring you all the news from Washington that the government does not want you to know. Our topic today is the one-year anniversary of Iraq. I want to hear from you. I want to know what you think, whether you think this whole thing was worthwhile or not. Do you think there was a connection to the 9/11 terrorist attacks or not? Do you think that the war in Iraq has anything to do with the war against terrorism? I'm going to invite as my guest later on in the program a guy by the name of Jeff Meredith. Now, I think it's important always to hear the other side whenever you have a debate on the radio. And I think it's important for you folks to get a chance to challenge him, too. He's from Young America's Foundation, which is a conservative think tank. And I'm looking forward to debating him on air. Before I do that, though, I want to introduce you to me. You may not know me. As I said, my name is Mark Levine, and I'm very excited to be here on RadioPower.org and to be here every day. Now, I've had a show in Washington every week on Sunday for almost a year now. Before then, just to give you my background, because it's important to know who's talking to you, I was a trial lawyer for a number of years. I'm a Harvard College graduate in economics, Yale Law School grad. I've done all kinds of things in my life, from teaching inner city school to hunting Nazis to living in Switzerland. Anyway, my most recent job was working as a congressional attorney. I worked for the Democrats on the House Judiciary Committee and the House Homeland Security Committee. And I did a lot of work on all kinds of things, everything from the Patriot Act to finding out really where our weaknesses were in Homeland Security. And in fact, I was sitting one day in a Homeland Security hearing, and I was listening to a guy from the Homeland Security Department tell us that he was the only person in the entire United States that was working on a bioterror threat. It seems that the President of the United States had set up a separate off-the-shelf organization called the Terrorist Threat Integration Center, or TTIC, and the President didn't want the Homeland Security Department, the one that Congress had set up to coordinate all the different problems in Homeland Security, to get all the information together. He didn't want them to know any information. He wanted to give it all to his off-the-shelf organization that didn't really have any congressional oversight. And I was sitting there, and I was listening to this, and I was listening to the fact that the President was breaking the law. He wasn't following this department, you know, that he signed. And I heard more and more that made me concerned. I heard that, for example, the cargo on our airplanes was not being checked. That's right. When you go on the airplane, yeah, they check your shoes. They make you take your shoes off, and they check your bags. But what they don't check is the mail going underneath the airplane. They don't check packages. That really scared me. It also scared me when I found out that President Bush did not want to take steps to protect our chemical and nuclear plants in the United States. And without going into which plants are, let's just say, lax in security, let's just say that there are some plants in the United States where an intelligent terrorist could do what Timothy McVeigh did, drive a truck bomb into a plant, and, well, I don't even want to think about the consequences. Look, I couldn't believe that I was sitting here, I was a staffer, I was sitting in this hearing, I was listening to everything, and I came home, I expected, frankly, this to be top story on the news. I heard nothing. Nothing at all. And not only that, but the official that told us all this, a guy by the name of Paul Redmond, I did read in the Washington Post 3 days later on page, I think, A26, that he was sacked, that he was fired. Well, that's not quite what the story said. The story said that he resigned on account of health problems. Now, I saw Paul Redmond 3 days earlier before he resigned, and he gave that very astounding testimony to Congress. And he didn't seem unhealthy to me at all. He seemed to me like he was just shocking members of Congress by telling them the truth about the Bush administration. And this is an overall pattern that you and I know. A lot of you may have seen the 60 Minutes episode last night. Richard Clark, former national counterterrorism advisor to four presidents, to Ronald Reagan, George Bush the first, to Bill Clinton, and now George W. Bush the second. And he had a lot of harsh words to say. We're probably going to get to that some later on in here. The point is that I was sitting there, and there was no media in the room. It was a public hearing, but there were maybe a dozen people in the audience, maybe two dozen. And I kept learning all these things that I was learning in Congress that was never coming out in the mainstream media. The mainstream media just wasn't reporting it. Now, some of you may think it's a grand conspiracy. I happen to think it's because they're lazy. I happen to think it's because they're not focused on every congressional hearing, and because a lot of the times they don't listen to the minority party, in this case the Democrats, when they try to tell the press what's going on. So I decided at that hearing that I was going to take a look into radio. I was going to give the information to people that we had in Congress that was not being conveyed to them. And so I hope you will regularly listen to my program, The Inside Scoop from Washington. It's going to be a little interesting now that I'm going every day a week. I hope I'll still be able to give you the inside information that I give every week on Sunday on WAGE. I get all kinds of information. I get information from people on the Hill. That would be staffers who work for the Democratic Party and some for the Republican Party. I have some sources in the administration. I even have some sources in intelligence agencies. Don't worry. I won't give you anything classified. But what I will tell you is that people are anxious to talk. People are very upset about this administration. And that's why they leak stuff to me that I can then give to you. So I hope you'll listen in regularly every weekday, Monday through Friday. And if you want to know more about who I am, hey, you know, don't hesitate to call. Don't ever hesitate to call. On any topic that I'm talking about, I want to hear from you. This is partly your show. This is your way to get information from me, from my guest, and to challenge me, and to challenge my guest. There's nothing I like better than a challenge. So if you disagree with me, as George Bush said to the terrorists, and as Kerry said to George Bush, bring it on. Bring it on. I hope you will call in. I hope you'll challenge me. The number is toll-free. It's 877-57-SCOOP. That's 877-577-2667. And it's toll-free, very easy to dial in. And I want to hear from you. I want to know what you think about the war in Iraq. I want to know if you think the war in Iraq was worthwhile. Was it well fought? Was it well planned? Did we have the organization in there that we needed to have? Do you think that this war is significant in the fight against terrorism? Or do you think perhaps that the war brought us terrorism that we wouldn't have otherwise had? Do you think that this was the best way to fight Al-Qaeda and September 11th? Do you think there was any connection at all? I want to know from you, 1 year after the war in Iraq, what have we accomplished? Have we made America safer? Have we done any good, or have we just gotten rid of a too-big dictator that, frankly, was not the most serious dictator, not the most serious threat to American national security? Anyway, we're going to get to you and your questions. Again, the number is 877-57-SCOOP. I particularly want to encourage the people who are first hearing me on RadioPower.org to give me a call and let your voice be heard. I know you may be listening to me at work, and you may have to slip in a call here and there, but hey, that's okay. Again, it's your voice that needs to be heard. I want to go to my guest now. As I said, his name is Jeff Meredith. He and I met when we were debating. I do debates twice a week with local conservatives before a foundation that high school students from across the nation. We get several hundred come in and hear us do the debates. And I'm very excited to have him on the air because, as I said, I think it's important to get both sides of any story. So, Jeff Meredith, welcome to the show. How are you, sir?
Thank you very much, Mark. I'm happy to be here. I'm doing quite well.
Well, let me ask you. I assume you support Bush's policy in Iraq. Is that correct?
Absolutely, I do. I think the world is a much better place without Saddam Hussein.
Well, you know, I'll agree with you at the outset that I'm not a big fan of Saddam Hussein, but I don't think that quite answers the question. I mean, do you think that the benefits outweigh the costs? Do you think, for example, that Saddam Hussein was more of a threat than Kim Jong-il of North Korea or the Saudi Arabian dictators?
Well, I do believe he was more of a threat than either of those two guys. I think that he had already been responsible for killing Americans in Israel, college students, and he was paying the Palestinian suicide bombers.
Now he was paying the Palestine suicide bombers. That's true. When they died, he paid the martyrs' families some money. But wouldn't you say that the PLO and Hamas were far more responsible for the deaths of Americans in Israel than Saddam Hussein?
Absolutely, and Israel is dealing with those terrorists as they see fit, too.
Well, maybe we should go in and bomb them. What do you think?
I think that Israel is capable of defending themselves.
Okay, well, you know, my problem is not that Saddam Hussein was a good guy. I would not say that. I don't think anyone that I know of would say that. I don't think any of my callers would say that, too. But I want to hear from you, 877-57-SCOOP. I think the question is really who is a greater threat. While Iraq, and I remember sitting in Congress. Well, I wasn't in Congress. I was working for a member of Congress. But I was sitting in my office, And we heard news that North Korea was developing a nuclear weapon, and this was in 2001 and into 2002. And particularly after 9/11, there was a point, I remember, at the end of 2001 where it was told that Kim Jong-il would have nuclear weapons in 60 days, and then in 40 days, and then in 20 days, and that he had the missiles that were capable of hitting Los Angeles. And I don't know what you folks listening know about Kim Jong-il, but he really, I mean, if you have to do a comparison of evil, I think he's quite a match for Saddam Hussein. He has killed more people, his own people. He's purposely let people have famine in his country where hundreds of thousands have died, and taken food aid to feed his military. And then he was developing nuclear weapons and making it very clear that he wasn't going to respond to inspections. And it seems to me that that was someone who we could have threatened, we could have sent inspectors in, we could have done the same kind of stuff that we did to Saddam Hussein, but Bush apparently wanted to keep negotiating with him.
Well, Mark, I don't know if there's an actual evil ladder wherein, you know, each person is judged based on how evil they are, and that's what we should do next. You know, if we want to look at North Korea, maybe we should look at how we got to be in that position in the first place. Bill Clinton gave them the technology they needed to develop nuclear bombs.
Oh,
and
that's
for
not
what
true,
reason?
Jeff.
That they would use it for good.
No, that's not true, Jeff. They started to do nuclear weapons, North Korea, in the early 90s, and the Clinton administration signed a deal with them to put inspectors in to make sure that they would not develop nuclear weapons.
Mark, we were giving them huge amounts of weapons-grade plutonium and uranium, specifically so that they would use it, as they said, for peaceful means.
And did they do that?
No, of course not, because they're communist dictators.
Yeah, hey, but Jeff, we had inspectors there watching. It was only under George Bush's reign that they kicked the inspectors out. And that's, I think, when we had to take a strong stand. Don't you agree that Bush should have taken a strong stand against North Korea?
You know what? I think he should have taken a strong stand. But if you're going to tell me that the inspectors got kicked out and Kim Jong-il developed nuclear weapons in about 90 days, then that's just flat-out wrong. The inspectors that were there were completely ineffective. These guys have been developing them since the early 90s.
No, it's not that he developed them in 90 days. He started developing them in 01. But when he kicked out the inspectors, that was when he was getting close, and that's when they could have stopped him. My point is this. My point is that, first of all, let me ask you this, Jeff. Do you agree with me that September 11th had nothing to do with Iraq? Can we agree on that?
Absolutely. Bush agrees with you on that, too.
Okay,
Bush and Cheney are both on record as having said Saddam did not orchestrate the September 11th attacks.
Cheney's been all over the map on this. I don't know that I agree that they're both on record on this. I've heard Dick Cheney say, well, it's not really clear. But I'm glad you and I agree. I think we all know now that had nothing to do with September 11th. One of the things I saw that really struck me as interesting was Richard Clark, the National Counterterrorism Advisor, talking on 60 Minutes. Did you get a chance to see that last night, Joe?
I know enough about it.
Okay. Well, what he was saying was that, you know, really the same thing that Paul O'Neill wrote in his book, that Bush had designs on Iraq really from the outset, from January 01 of his presidency. And
well,
Mark,
let's be honest here. If this is the case, then Saddam Hussein fooled every single world leader. I mean, you got the French, you got the Germans, you even have the Syrians all voting that he needed to disarm. You have John Kerry, you have Bill Clinton also on record saying exactly what George W. Bush did.
I agree with you that he had to disarm. I think that inspectors, I support the policy in Iraq right up to the chance we went to war. I supported going in there, insisting on inspectors, because the inspectors had him contained. Hang on, Jeff, I want to get a caller on the line and see what the caller has to say. Caller, you're on the air with Mark Levine. How are you?
Hi there. This is Ben Birch from WhiteRoseSociety.org, where your program will be archived.
Well, thank you, Ben. I appreciate that. Do you have a comment or question for me or my
comment,
guest?
Yeah, I'm formerly in the nuclear power industry and did safety systems for Quad Cities and Zion nuclear power systems, and I understand nuclear technology very well. We gave North Korea no weapons grade anything. We were giving them the 8 to 10% enriched commercial power grade fuel rods,
the kind that they could use for electricity.
Fuel rods, nothing you could make into a bomb without years of work.
Thank you for that. I appreciate that. Jeff, do you have a comment?
Well, the bottom line is that they turned around with what we'd given them and used it to produce bombs when they'd sworn they wouldn't.
But so, to me,
no.
To produce weapons.
They never did. They
we had not given them
stuff that they were given by the Soviets and by the Chinese back in the early 1970s, and finally, after many years of work on that stuff, they finally got to the point where they had weapons.
See, I think the problem is that they kicked the inspectors out. And what surprises me is that George Bush would spend all this time and energy focusing on Iraq, I mean, to the extent of going to war, when we have a real nuclear threat. I mean, a real threat to our citizens, and particularly in California, where they can hit. And of course, it's not just North Korea. We've got Saudi Arabia, who, you know, I gave an inside scoop on this 10 months ago, back when it was semi-secret information. I think everybody knows now that the prime country behind the September 11th attacks after Afghanistan was Saudi Arabia. Now, Saudi Arabia is a good friend of the Bush administration. Saudi Arabia has given George Bush or his family, according to Craig Unger in the book House of Bush, House of Saud, more than $1 billion over the course of decades dealing with their oil companies. And according to a classified report in the CIA, there are 28 pages that Bush refuses to make public. It shows in detail how Saudi Arabia aided these terrorists, aided al-Qaeda. In fact, and I think you probably agree with me, Jeff, Saudi Arabia, as you know, teaches this Wahhabi school, this very harsh anti-American brand of Islam, and they send teachers all over the Islamic countries teaching hatred of America, including to Afghanistan. And yet we haven't said boo hardly against Saudi Arabia.
Well, I do agree with you completely. I think our position against Saudi Arabia should be a lot harsher. But in regards to what you're saying about North Korea having these missiles and whatnot, then my guess is that you'd also support a missile defense for America so we can protect ourselves.
If it worked, but it doesn't. And before we spend billions of dollars in untried technology, let me tell you something about missile defense that also is something that I think very few Americans know. I remember the morning of 9/11 very clearly. In fact, I think every American probably remembers where they were on September 11, 2001. I was, as I said, working in Congress at the time, and what was up for debate that day, and I'm always amazed that this hasn't gotten more press, what was up for the debate that day was precisely what you mentioned, Jeff. It was missile defense. It was the question of whether we should spend all this money on a missile shield for the United States. The Democrats had a counterproposal. They wanted to take that money and spend it on counterterrorism efforts. Very interesting. Bush, of course, had cut counterterrorism efforts significantly in 01. In fact, he gave the FBI, according to an article in the Washington Post today, about 10% of what they requested in counterterrorism efforts. It wasn't that big a deal to him. That's also what Richard Clark said last night. And the Republicans were voting it down. They cared more about missile defense than the kind of human intelligence we needed to stop terrorist attacks.
Well, Mark, first of all, 6 out of the last 10 missile defense practice tests have worked. You can't expect to hit it first time through. Of course, it's going to take a lot of research and development. But if you're going to blame Bush for the terrorist attacks, when under Bill Clinton's watch we had the World Trade Center bombing, we had Mogadishu, we had the embassies in Kenya and Tanzania, we had the Khobar Towers in Saudi Arabia, we had the USS Cole bomb, and he never did a single thing in response to any of that. If you're going to say that after 9 months of Bush in office, that he somehow has allowed this terrorism to go through, then you got to look at what happened during Clinton's presidency.
Well, I think if you look at what Richard Clark said last night on 60 Minutes, and I haven't read his book yet. It just came out, but I really suggest that our listeners hear his book. What he says is that Clinton was very much concerned about terrorism and, in fact, had worked on a plan to deal with al-Qaeda, had worked on a plan to go in with the Northern Alliance and do something about Afghanistan.
Well,
and
Mark, how much time did he need? 8 more years?
Well, now, wait a minute.
Clinton
that's
always
not
concerned
fair.
First, about everything, but it was what he did that counts.
It is what he did that counts. So let's talk about what Clinton did, and we'll compare it to what Bush did. What Clinton did, of course, in 1993 was at that time, al-Qaeda wasn't as strong. We had the World Trade Center bombing. He went, he prosecuted, he found the people, put them in jail. All right. Then came
he put two guys in jail out of a vast terrorist network.
And he worked on finding that vast terrorist network. Here's the problem. When you have, I know that up as late as 1999, December 1999, you had Clinton very much concerned about al-Qaeda, so concerned that he was having cabinet meetings every day saying, what are we doing about al-Qaeda? And so much so that he managed to foil a terrorist attack to bomb Los Angeles International Airport on December 31st, 1999. And, you know, hey, I used to live in Los Angeles. That would have concerned me. Clinton was on the watch, and I think that anyone who would suggest that Clinton was in some way less looking at terrorists than Bush, really needs to read Richard Clark's book. Because here you have this guy appointed by Ronald Reagan, goes through George Bush Sr., goes through Bill Clinton, and his harshest words were for George W. Bush, because there was a meeting between Sandy Berger and Condoleezza Rice right when they came into office. And Sandy Berger said, look, the greatest threat to America is Al-Qaeda. Richard Clark said, the greatest threat to America is Al-Qaeda. And they wouldn't even let him meet with the president. Instead, he met with Paul Wolfowitz, who said, why are you worrying about Al-Qaeda? The problem is Iraq. And what we also know from Richard Clark's book is that after September 11th, the president insisted that he find a connection with Iraq. He said, go find to see if there's a connection with Iraq. And Clark said, hey, you know, Mr. President, there is no connection with Iraq. It's 9/11 was done by Al-Qaeda. Isn't that right? And the CIA said yes, and the FBI said yes. And the president said, you go look again, and you go find me a connection. We have a president that was obsessed with Saddam Hussein, and I think when you look at the war in Iraq, you have to look at one alternatives, whether it's North Korea or Saudi Arabia or anything else, and then I'd like to also focus on what we accomplished in Iraq and whether it was worth the amount of lives and the amount of money. But go ahead, Jeff.
Well, Mark, first of all, this guy Clark, you make him out to be a neutral observer, which he isn't. He's a Clinton staffer.
He's also a Reagan staffer.
He's been so concerned about terrorism all these years. Why did he wait to release his book in an election year ploy? Come on.
No, wait a minute. That's not fair.
First of all, let's make sure we know regarding this this 60 Minutes interview. Viacom owns 60 Minutes, and they own Simon & Schuster, who put out this book. This was nothing but a big business conglomerate trying to boost its own profits by selling the news. And you know that's true.
Yeah, I'm sure that they put him on the show because he's got his book there. But let's talk about who Richard Clark is. Richard Clark is a registered Republican appointed by Ronald Reagan in the 80s, served Ronald Reagan for a number of years, served George H.W. Bush for all 4 years of his presidency, served Bill Clinton for 8 years, and then served George Bush until just a year ago. So he was the head of counterterrorism. It was a cabinet-level position. This is a guy... I don't know how you can challenge his integrity. I really think that's pushing it, Jeff.
I'm challenging his integrity because he waited way too long to get this information out. If he was so concerned about it, why did he wait till now, till right before the election?
Well, let's talk about it. First, we had the September 11th attacks, and I think he wanted to fight Al-Qaeda. And the administration was fighting Afghanistan, and then they took this turn that... Actually, speaking of going for the elections, that's exactly what Richard Clark said happened, that it was going for the elections in November 2002. Karl Rove said, we've got to focus on Iraq. Now, my belief is that they started to focus on Iraq largely because they didn't get Osama bin Laden like they were supposed to. If they'd gotten Osama bin Laden at Tora Bora and they hadn't let him go, they wouldn't have had to try to find some easy target to pick on. I mean, why Iraq? Why not Libya? Why not go after Gaddafi? In both cases... both dictators promised to cooperate, and Saddam Hussein let the inspectors in, and we invaded him anyway.
Well, that's a great question. You know, what a lot of people haven't mentioned is the fact that this Gulf War, the second Gulf War, was really a continuation of the first one. Saddam Hussein lost. He agreed to let the inspectors come in and have all-inclusive inspections whenever they wanted, wherever they wanted, and he would not get in their way. When he kicked them all out, what did Bill Clinton do? He was probably pretty concerned, but as usual, he didn't do a single thing about it.
Sure he did. He sent bombs over and bombed the last remaining weapons of mass destruction that Iraq ever had. And when he did that, if you recall, the Republicans in Congress were very upset because they said, Bill Clinton, how dare you bomb Iraq? You're trying to take the attention off of what really matters, Monica Lewinsky.
Well, let's remember, Bill Clinton waited and waited to bomb Iraq until the day before he was scheduled to be impeached. Then he launched a couple bombs. I remember him blowing up a TV station. We didn't know if there was any weapons of mass destruction in that TV station. My guess is that Saddam Hussein did not put all of his weapons of mass destruction in one little building. But to say that that Bill Clinton destroyed all of Saddam's weapons is... ridiculous. In fact, he admitted that he didn't. I can quote you right now from back in 1998 and later on from Bill Clinton and John Kerry and all the other Democrats who agree with George W. Bush that Saddam Hussein did indeed still have weapons of mass destruction.
I want you to quote me in 1 second. First up, again, the number is 877-57-SCOOP, 877-577-2667. I particularly want to reach out to our Radio Power listeners. We need your calls. We need your comments. You can call to challenge me, call to challenge Jeff. But please take part in this conversation. It's very important for people to understand whether this war was worth fighting. Now, to get back, to, again, the number, one more time, 877-577-2667. By the way, you can also send me an email. To send an email, just send it to Mark, M-A-R-K, at RadioInsideScoop.com. That's Mark, M-A-R-K, at RadioInsideScoop.com. Now, Jeff, I remember when the war began, and I remember Clinton saying that he destroyed more weapons of mass destruction in the 90s after the Gulf War than during the Gulf War. What did they do? The UN inspectors went in there. They found large quantities of weapons, and they destroyed them. And they couldn't find any more for several years. And, of course, we now know that
because they were kicked out.
Well, they weren't kicked out till 98. They weren't kicked out till 98. And Clinton, in several bombings, it wasn't just a TV station, he bombed some 12 different sites showing where all the known sites where they thought they had weapons were. And that was it. And I'd like to hear your quotes because I don't believe, I mean, you have John Kerry believing Bush. John Kerry's mistake, if you will, in voting for to give the president authority to go to the Iraq War, his mistake was he believed George Bush. George Bush was going in there and saying he had these weapons. And, you know, Kerry, I guess, should have known that our president was a liar. But he didn't at the time, and he believed him, and now we know. Now the whole world knows.
Let me ask you a question, Mark.
Yeah.
You obviously believe that Saddam Hussein did have weapons of mass destruction
in
at
1980s,
one point.
In the 1980s, yes. We helped provide them to him. Don Rumsfeld, in fact, was instrumental.
No. We did not arm them with weapons of mass destruction.
Sure we did.
We did indeed arm them, but there is no proof whatsoever that we gave them chemical
American
weapons.
Companies, along with, by the way, I should say Russian and French companies. It wasn't only American companies. American companies provided to Saddam Hussein chemicals and biological substances that he could use to arm. Absolutely.
That is simply not true. In fact, it's on record, it's on transcript, Donald Rumsfeld told Saddam to stop using those weapons.
Oh, well, you know, it's one thing. Here you have Saddam Hussein back in the 1980s, right? He's killed thousands of people in Iran, his own Kurdish population, and then Don Rumsfeld, 3 months later, goes in to establish diplomatic relations with Iraq that we didn't have before, and while he's establishing diplomatic relations, oh, he's waving his finger and saying, hey, you know, by the way, try not to kill your own people. You know, that doesn't seem very, very harsh to me.
It may not have been very harsh, but you still have to remember that the enemy of our enemy is our friend, and at that point in time, Iran was a much bigger enemy. They were holding 50 Americans hostage, or had done that. And it was in our best interest to support Iraq.
See, Jeff, my problem with that whole argument, the enemy of our enemy is our friend, is that sometimes the enemy of our enemy is our enemy. The reason why Afghanis trained under the United States, trained the Mujahideen, taught them how to do shoulder-to-air airplane missiles is because the Soviet Union invaded Afghanistan. We wanted to fight the Soviet Union. And then we helped Iraq to fight Iran. Well, we helped, you know, Noriega in Panama, and then he turned against us. We helped Marcos in the Philippines, and then he turned against us. We're helping Saudi Arabia and Egypt now, and it's their dictatorships that are generally leading the population to dislike them, rise up against them, and are fueling places like Al-Qaeda. When are we going to learn that blowback, which, by the way, is the CIA term for unintended consequences, when are we going to learn that blowback is a serious problem and stop aiding all these really unsavory characters? Because it comes back to bite us time and time again. Virtually every one of our enemies is someone we aided at one time or another.
That's true, Mark. You know, we aided Joseph Stalin during World War II, but
yep.
I think most people consider that money well spent. It helped defeat Hitler. Then we still had to turn around and fight the Cold War with those jerks. But that doesn't mean the fact that it wasn't money well spent at the time. You know, America has remained consistent. We're the good guys in this. We're not on a moral plane with the Iranians or the Iraqis or the North Koreans.
The problem is, I don't say we are. The problem is that we should be the good guys. And when you have an elective war, as we did with Iraq, the whole world, by the way, supported us in Afghanistan. Everyone understood when 3,000 Americans are killed in the worst attack, I shouldn't say since Pearl Harbor, because it was worse than Pearl Harbor, with the first foreign attack on our soil since the War of 1812, since the British burned the White House. When 3,000 Americans died, the French had a newspaper, Le Monde, in Paris, that said, we are all Americans now. All the countries of the world supported us, all reasonable countries, and even some unreasonable countries. Everyone understood that war was justified. And if we'd only gone to war with al-Qaeda, while at the same time containing Saddam Hussein, I think that containment was useful, then I think that we wouldn't have had the problems we have today. We wouldn't have had Spain go to an anti-American prime minister, because I think the Spanish people would have understood our fight against Afghanistan. It's when we fought with Iraq, when the United Nations, who is supposedly the group that should if their sanctions are violated, the United Nations should go after Iraq. If they said, hey, don't go, when even Canada says, United States, watch what you're doing here, I think at some point we have to listen to what the world says.
Well, Mark, you know, the United Nations has had countries like Libya and Cuba and Iraq on commissions for disarmament and commissions for human rights. We should not be taking orders from people who hate us. We shouldn't be taking orders from people who abuse their own people. And it's silly to let the UN boss around American our sovereignty.
We shouldn't be taking orders from the United Nations, but at the same time, we should respect countries like Canada, France, Germany, Spain, Japan, our allies, people who really, when even Canada says, America, it's looking to me like you're not being the good guys anymore, maybe we should listen. Jeff, I got to go to commercial. We're going to come back with more from Jeff Meredith, Young Conservative, and also your calls and your questions. The number here is 877-57-SCOOP, 877-577-2667. And we'll be back with more of the Inside Scoop right after these messages.
George W. Bush ignored the threat of al-Qaeda for months and did too little to stop the September 11th attacks on the United States, a former administration counterterrorism official said Sunday. Richard Clark's accusations, aired in a CBS 60 Minutes interview, drew a detailed point-by-point rebuttal from the White House as it attempted to defend Bush's standing as a presidential candidate who was tough on terrorism. In the program on his book to be launched Monday, Clark charged that Bush had done a terrible job in addressing the threat from terrorism. Former President Jimmy Carter has strongly criticized George Bush and Tony Blair for waging an unnecessary war to oust Saddam Hussein based on lies or misinterpretations. The 2002 Nobel Peace Prize winner said Mr. Blair had allowed his better judgment to be swayed by Mr. Bush's desire to finish a war that his father had started. In an interview with the British newspaper The Independent on the first anniversary of the American and British invasion of Iraq, Carter said the Iraq war was based on lies and misinterpretations from London and from Washington, claiming falsely that Saddam Hussein was responsible for the 9/11 attacks and claiming falsely that Iraq had weapons of mass destruction. Reports that led to charges against six U.S. soldiers accused of abusing detainees at Iraq's Abu Ghraib prison came from within the military, not from prisoner complaints, a senior U.S. military official said Sunday. The soldiers, members of a military police unit, were charged Saturday with a range of crimes, including conspiracy, dereliction of duty, cruelty and maltreatment, assault, and indecent acts with another person. The military said about 20 detainees at the prison on the western outskirts of Baghdad were involved. Israel killed Hamas founder Ahmed Yassin in a helicopter missile strike outside a Gaza City mosque Monday, prompting threats of unprecedented revenge by Palestinian militants against Israel and the United States. Yassin was the most prominent Palestinian leader killed by Israel in more than 3 years of fighting, and his assassination was seen as a major escalation. More Minuteman News after this.
I'm Oscar Davis. You may have a serious eye condition and not even know it. Vision loss is not a normal part of aging. Some vision changes are normal, some are due to eye disease. Do you know the difference? Open your eyes to the facts. To get more information about vision and aging, or find out about what help is available if you're having vision problems, call Lighthouse International at 1-800-829-0500 or visit www.lighthouse.org.
A West Virginia man accused of robbing a convenience store left a big clue behind for investigators, his wallet. Terry Lee Romine of Hansford was charged with robbing the V-Mart in Comfort, West Virginia, Friday morning. He allegedly ordered a slice of pizza and then demanded cash from the clerk, saying he had a gun. As he fled, the clerk looked down and saw the man's wallet on the counter. For the Minuteman News Service, This is Don Waller in New York.
Minuteman News Break is a production of TakeBackTheMedia.com.
On the Inside Scoop, I'm your host, Mark Levine. We're talking about the war in Iraq 1 year later, and I want to hear from you. I want to know what you think. The number here is 877-57-SCOOP, 57-SCOOP, 877-577-2667. Please call in and let me know what you think of my debate with my guest. My guest is Jeff Meredith. He is a program officer at Young America's Foundation. And he disagrees with me very much on the war in Iraq, and that's why we're debating on the air for you. Again, the number is 877-57-SCOOP. You can also send me an email. The email address is mark, M-A-R-K, at radioinsidescoop.com. Jeff, we're back on the air. I want to go over some of the things that the Bush administration said about the war in Iraq, and I want to know whether you think any of these things are true. They said that Iraq had chemical weapons. Do you think that's true?
Absolutely. We all agree that Saddam Hussein at one point or another had these weapons.
Yeah, 20 years ago. Do you think he had them? Do you think he had them, let's say, in 2002, 2003, 2004?
Well, you know, I tend to agree with the French and the Germans that he did indeed have them.
Really? In 2002, 2003, 2004?
You know, like I said, every single intelligence agency on this planet believed that that Iraq had these weapons. I don't know where they've gone. The fact that we haven't found them yet is worrisome because it suggests that Saddam has probably already given them to terrorists.
Okay, well, you know, I'm going to go with you for a moment, and then I'm going to give the information I have, which shows you're incorrect. But let's go with you for a moment. Let's say that Saddam Hussein had these weapons at the time we invaded, and let's say he turned them over to terrorists. Okay? Does that make America more safe or less safe?
Well, it would make us less safe, except for the fact that he had probably already given these to them before we invaded, because I don't think these weapons were going to be able to slip out when you had 150,000 American troops bearing down on Baghdad.
Well, you know, so now you're saying that even though there's no evidence of this, you're saying he gave chemical weapons to terrorists, even though we now have scientists that have said that they've all been destroyed, and that he did this without us our knowing about it, and, well, if he's already given, and that we're less safe. I mean, what's interesting to me is that I've seen the national intelligence estimates, and what they show is that the CIA said that Saddam Hussein would only use chemical weapons and only give them to terrorists if he were attacked.
So you know what? That is nothing but an analysis. It's not true. They can't know for a fact whether or not Saddam Hussein would do this. And I think the bottom line
is
that
speculation.
He had been in connection with multiple terrorists. We found a bunch in Iraq. Ansar al-Islam was deeply rooted in northern Iraq.
Well, now, wait a minute. Now, see, that's completely unfair. Northern Iraq, as many of our listeners know, was controlled by the Kurds,
not
who were
in the
friendly,
Kurdish area.
Friendly to the United States. Well, I know that the example that Cheney gave of it was in the Kurdish area where he complained about a single Iraqi terrorist. I mean, compare it to what Saudi Arabia has done, it's ridiculous to say that Iraq was somehow a fountainhead of terrorism. They were not a threat to the United States.
No, the entire Middle East is a fountainhead of terrorism, and Bush has to take this one nation at a time, one situation at a time. He's not going to invade every country there. Iraq is
exactly
a nation,
and that's
that
why
would
we have
be great to invade, frankly, because they were in complete violation of 14 United Nations resolutions. Now, you're the one who said we should obey the United Nations.
Yeah,
Iraq
but if
certainly
you
wasn't.
Now,
and
we know
as
how
we
now,
went
but Jeff,
to enforce a UN resolution, 14 of them, in fact.
Jeff, wait a minute. Now, how is it that you diss the UN, right? You
yeah.
say that they're not worthy of respect, and then you say there's 14 United Nations resolutions, and then the UN doesn't believe that those resolutions have been violated enough to be enforced. But somehow, I'm amazed when Bush supporters do this. They say, well, we had to be there because of United Nations resolutions, and at the same time, they're saying, well, don't let the UN make any decisions. Shouldn't the UN enforce its own resolutions?
I am saying the United Nations was completely impotent. They had passed all these resolutions and had failed to to back them up with any muscle, just like Bill Clinton did with all of his threats on Saddam Hussein.
And what did Bill Clinton do, and what did the United Nations do, and what did all the information showed? What it showed was we had contained Saddam Hussein. What it showed was because of UN inspectors, because of Bill Clinton, because we sent the inspectors in, because we destroyed his weapons of mass destruction, he was a toothless tiger. His army was a third the size of what it was in the Persian Gulf War. He had done no terrorist attacks in 10 years. And that's what people were telling the president. I want to give one of our callers a chance to join in the conversation. Caller, you're on the air with Mark Levine and Jeff Meredith. How are you, sir? Or ma'am?
I'm fine. I wanted to ask Jeff something. He says the entire Middle East is the fountain of terrorism. Why did the United States go into Iraq? Why didn't we go into Syria? Why didn't we go into Libya? It seems to me the only reason we went into Iraq was that George Bush Sr. messed up, and he didn't follow Saddam Hussein all the way back into Baghdad in the early part of his administration, and he stopped, and after he chased the Iraqis out of Kuwait, and as a result, I think George Bush Jr., the current president of the United States, was just trying to finish up his father's job.
What do you say to that, Jeff?
Well, on the one hand, I think the caller is right. George Bush, one, should have gone in there and taken care of it, and then Bill Clinton should have done it, and both of them failed, and it was left to George W. Bush to pick up the pieces. But, again, like I said, Iraq is one nation. George Bush cannot, America can't invade every single nation in the Middle East, obviously.
But that's my point, Jeff. Is since we can't invade every single nation in the Middle East, we don't have the manpower to do it.
Why did we go into Syria?
I mean, aren't there greater threats than Saddam Hussein in 2003? I would agree with the caller that Syria, for example, was a greater threat than Saddam Hussein.
I don't think Syria was a greater threat. Well, I don't remember Syria invading any other nation like Iraq did.
Syria occupies Lebanon, Jeff. Come on. Syria's been occupying Lebanon for 25 years. That's an independent nation that Syria controls. I think you got to back down on that one.
No. Look, Lebanon
is Syria the head of the area where in the Bekaa Valley in Lebanon, which is being defended by the Syrian army, and that's the area that keeps sending those rockets and bad stuff into Israel?
They control all of Lebanon. They have been occupying Lebanon for more than 20 years now. It's a brutal occupation.
Israel and Syria had both occupied Lebanon, and Israel pulled out. Obviously, Syria should pull out too, but Lebanon is a lawless land. It's run by Hezbollah.
It's run by Syria, frankly. The only reason Hezbollah has the power it does is because Syria allows it to have that power. In fact, one of the most interesting things Israel did recently that I support is they threatened Syria when they had the Hezbollah attack, and the Hezbollah attack stopped. And I think that's actually the route that Israel needs to go. My point is, it's not, I mean, I don't think, I actually do think Syria is more dangerous than Saddam Hussein, but I think their country is more dangerous than Syria. I mean, Iran is getting nuclear weapons now. We have North Korea. We have Saudi Arabia that, again, aided al-Qaeda. Why aren't we doing anything against Saudi Arabia?
You know, I wish we would do something against those guys. But let's look at the facts here, too, regarding the Iraq war. Do you really think that Gaddafi and Libya would have given up their weapons of mass destruction if Iraq had not been invaded?
Not only do I think it, I know it. And I know it because we have seen, for example, there's an article by Gary Hart when they approached him and wanted to make an arrangement. What we know
you're just with Muammar Gaddafi himself, who was quoted as saying that he did this because he didn't want to end up like Saddam. That's a direct quote.
That's not a direct quote. He hasn't said that.
He has said exactly that.
Well, you're going to have to show me where he said that. What we know is that these ties between Libya, and I'll find the evidence for this and announce it on air tomorrow if I don't get it today, but Libya had been making these arrangements for years. And particularly in the last in the months of the Bush administration, they were doing it long before 9/11. It had nothing to do with the Iraq War. And frankly, Saddam Hussein was doing the exact same thing. Saddam Hussein approached the United States and said, "You know what? We'll have free elections, which is far more than Libya has ever gone. We'll have free elections if you'll call off this war. We'll turn over everything as they did. We'll open the palaces." And Bush made a very surprising move. He didn't call Saddam Hussein's bluff. Maybe it was a bluff. Maybe it was all a lie, but all Bush had to do was to say, all right, you promised me free elections, all right, then sign here on the dotted line. You're going
to
have
Are you referring to the same elections where Saddam Hussein got 100% of the vote?
No.
You think that's a free election?
I don't.
You trust this guy after all that, and you're trusting Saddam Hussein to hold a free election or to let people live who don't vote for him?
Jeff, if he promised...
If you gave Bush half the benefit of the doubt that you give Saddam Hussein a murdering tyrant, then we wouldn't be having this talk right now.
Jeff, if Saddam Hussein makes a promise to hold free elections... And it's signed on the dotted line, and then you get a UN, I mean, he agrees, so then you get a UN resolution supporting it, you get the entire weight of the world behind it, and then he fails, he doesn't do it, he doesn't do what he's promised. Now we can invade, and we can go after him with the entire world's support. No one, even Saudi Arabia, Syria, even Arab countries couldn't deny if he made a promise on the dotted line that it was a justified war. The problem with this war is not that Saddam Hussein wasn't a bad guy, he was. The problem was is that we went to war without hardly any world support. Much of the world, most of the world, thinks we're a bit loony. And what it's doing is it's dividing NATO allies. It's taking the alliance, the cross-Atlantic alliance that we've had for a generation or more, and it's dividing us. That's what I see that we're happening in Spain. That in England, even though Blair came and supported us, most of the English are against us. Even stronger in France or Germany, they don't trust us. And my fear...
All right, but Mark, here's the thing. Saddam Hussein did sign on the dotted line. He agreed to inspectors.
And he let them in.
And when he kicked them out, the rest of the world turned a blind eye to it.
We kicked them out in 98.
And continue to abuse his own people. And now you want to make him sign on the dotted line to hold an election? You know, I think it's a little bit more important that our government enforce the protection of American lives, which is why this war was waged, not to let Iraqis have democracy within a forced election.
American lives? How did this help American at all?
Because this is a direct assault on a candy shop of terrorism.
A candy shop of terrorism? I mean, come on, we have 10,000 troops in Afghanistan. We have 140,000 troops in Iraq. Are you telling me that Iraq was a greater threat to the United States than the Taliban? Are you really arguing that?
Of course. The Taliban crumbled in, what, a week?
The Taliban still controls a third of Afghanistan because we don't have enough troops there.
Look, the Taliban are nothing but a bunch of ruffians. And if you're saying that the war in Iraq
nothing but a bunch of ruffians,
then you are demonstrating a profound misunderstanding of what America's military is capable of. Our military is designed to fight two wars on two separate fronts. The Iraq War is one of them. The war in Afghanistan
but the war
is
in
not.
Iraq,
it is a
no, no, wait, wait. Jeff, you just said the war in Iraq made America safer. And I want to know how. It looks to me like George Bush was able to do something that Saddam Hussein couldn't do. Saddam Hussein couldn't get al-Qaeda into Iraq. He didn't support al-Qaeda. He didn't work with them. There were no al-Qaeda terrorists in Iraq. But George Bush managed to do something that... horrible for America that Saddam Hussein didn't do. He brought al-Qaeda to Iraq. He brought terrorism to Iraq. He made Iraq a threat to America when it wasn't.
But, Mark, there were definitely terrorists in Iraq. For example, Abu Dhanal, remember him? He masterminded the hijacking
he was in
of the
Iraq
Silly
in the
Laura
80s.
Cruise ship.
He was in Iraq in the 80s.
Oh, so what? So if we waited for 20 years after September 11th, we wouldn't go after al-Qaeda then? The war should be ongoing always.
Well, no. Oh, my God. This sounds like 1984. It sounds like George Orwell, ongoing war. Then we have to attack Libya, too, because they attacked us in 86.
No,
hey, you know, we should attack Britain.
They continue to be prosecuted until we win.
You know, Great Britain attacked us 200 years ago. We probably need to go after them, too. Look.
I think we made peace with them, if I can't remember.
Saddam Hussein was a toothless tiger. He was bad to the Iraqi people, no question about it. But here, why is it the administration went to all this talking about chemical, biological weapons, talking about nuclear weapons? Do you think Iraq had nuclear weapons?
No.
Okay. So when Cheney said that, when Condoleezza Rice said we have to fear a mushroom cloud, when George Bush said that he was seeking uranium from Niger, those were all untruths, right?
No, absolutely not. I do believe that if Saddam Hussein had had the chance to grab nuclear weapons, he certainly would have. You trust him that he just wouldn't have, out of his own benevolence, nuclear weapons?
I think that just about every terrible dictator on Earth, if had the chance to grab nuclear weapons, would. And, in fact, Kim Jong-il did while we weren't watching. Hey, callers, you want to join in? The number is 877-57-SCOOP, 877-577-2667. It's a toll-free number, and we'd like to hear from you. We'd like you to join in this conversation. Or you can send me an email by sending it to Mark, M-A-R-K, at radioinsidescoop.com. Go ahead, Jeff.
Sure. Well, here's the thing, Mark. Here's my big problem. And, you know, I do think that there are principled people on the left who are against this war. I think Howard Dean, frankly, was one of them. He was against the war from the beginning. But the problem with you liberals and you Democrats is, of course, that the vast majority of you were for this war. And people like John Kerry, who specifically stated, I will be voting to give the President of the United States the authority to use force, if necessary, to disarm Saddam Hussein because I believe that a deadly arsenal of weapons of mass destruction in his hands is a grave threat to our security. That was in October 9, 2002.
Well, let's talk about that. Well, stop right there. Stop right there.
All right.
Okay. Let's talk about what the President did. The Democrats urged the President to make the case for war and to do that so that we could send inspectors into Iraq, and then if Saddam Hussein refused our inspectors to be able to use the threat to go to war as a threat in order to get the inspectors in. Bush refused to have two votes, and we all know the Republicans control Congress. He wasn't going to do a vote to allow inspectors in and then a further vote to have force. He said, you're only getting one vote. I'm in charge here. I'm the president. Republican Congress, we decide. And the one vote was, do you give the president authority to threaten Saddam Hussein with war if he won't let the inspectors in, or don't you? And that was the only choice John Kerry had, to vote to give you and I got to tell you something. If I had faith in the president, and at that time, you know, I may have, I can understand a representative saying, you've got to threaten war in order to get Saddam Hussein to listen. He's not going to listen otherwise. And so it makes perfect sense to me to threaten war, to say, Saddam Hussein, you've got to allow the inspectors in. And if you don't allow the inspectors in, we're going to war. And that's the resolution. I mean, you said it. I think your quote was exactly right, Jeff. You said what Kerry said. We have to threaten to go to war in order to allow inspectors in. But what did Saddam Hussein do? He allowed the inspectors in.
Yeah, and he didn't give them free rein to go
over totally
Iraq.
He totally gave them free rein.
And
they went into the palaces.
Let biplanes fly over Baghdad or any other part of the country.
That's not true at all.
They
totally let the inspectors
fly over
in.
Two at a time. That's what we needed to make sure that he wasn't moving this stuff around constantly, which is what he had done over the last 10 years.
He let the inspectors in. He let them in massive numbers. He let them in to go anywhere, to go into palaces. He had nothing to hide. He had nothing to hide. He let the inspectors in. Let me go to a caller. Caller, you're on the air.
Hi, how you doing?
I'm good. How are you? What's your name? Where are you from?
I'm Diane from Nashville, Tennessee.
Okay. Hi, Diane. What do you think about this debate?
Well, I was sitting at my computer working, and frankly, I find it simplistic. No offense, but and why I'm saying that is because the world has reached peak oil. The United States has run out of easily accessible oil. Our whole economy, our whole world, the whole planet is based on energy. We need oil. We can talk about weapons of mass destruction, sure, but I find it a ruse. Because then let's take on China, because they're totally corrupt.
Yeah, and they're dangerous, too. Look at all the people they killed at Tiananmen Square.
They're dangerous. You know, they attack and kill their own people. Look what they've done, you know. Whatever.
Square.
Okay.
Well, I think you're absolutely right. I think this war was fought over oil. In fact, we know from Paul O'Neill's book that in January 2001, within a week after Bush was elected, he was dividing up Iraqi oil. He was dividing
right.
And you know, the irony for me is that I've heard, when I've made this argument in the past, I've heard conservatives say, oh, well, we're not getting oil now, so how could this have been a war for oil? And it seems to me the only thing worse than blood for oil is when you do blood for oil and you do it so incompetently that you don't get any oil out of it. I mean, I think Bush was trying to get Iraqi oil. That's why he divided up the Iraqi oil fields in January 2001.
They're getting oil.
Stick on the line, caller. I want you to hear from Jeff and give you another chance to comment. Go ahead, Jeff.
All right. Okay. First of all, I don't think too many people consider Paul O'Neill's book a reputable source for the inner sanctums of the Bush administration. But
he was Treasury Secretary, for God's sake.
Your whole argument in this is George Bush used to be an oil man. There's oil in Iraq. Therefore, Bush did this war for oil. You know who was doing this war or opposing this war for oil? The people that had massive oil contracts in Iraq, France, and Russia.
That's because they had all contracts with Saddam.
In fact, gas here now is more expensive than it's ever been.
Exactly, Jeff. You proved my point. France and Russia had oil contracts with Saddam Hussein. American companies didn't. They wanted a peace, and that's why. And by the way, don't say Paul O'Neill isn't reputable. He produced the document. He showed the document dividing up Iraq into 10 separate boundary regions and which company would get which oil. And no one has disputed that that document is accurate.
And why are the oil fields so very well protected? And why, oh God, I mean,
why are they so well protected? Do you remember what happened in the last Gulf War when Saddam lit them all on fire? Do you remember that environmental disaster? Of course they have to be well protected. They're the only things the Iraqi people have right now. That is their economy.
Do you really believe that energy, we're going to know, okay, the end of our world on the planet as we know it now, very soon. We've reached peak oil and it's a decline. Okay, you don't really think that the powers on this planet are going to fight over energy?
I mean,
I don't understand what your point is.
She's saying that the reason we're there, there are lots of dictators in the world. Look at what happened in Liberia, where they used children as soldiers to order them to kill their parents, and then had a whole army of it, and Bush did nothing until the government fell apart because of other countries. Clearly, we didn't go into Iraq for humanitarian reasons. Is that why you think we went to war with Iraq?
No,
Jeff?
There was multiple reasons we went to war. First
what's
of
the
all,
number one
we've been discussing
in
the
mind,
whole time, the weapons of mass destruction is a huge issue. The terrorist candy shop is a huge issue. Continuing the first Gulf War and enforcing the treaty that Saddam signed when that was over is a issue. And finally, the fourth and smallest issue, in my opinion, is the humanitarian issue. Saddam Hussein had killed 500,000 to 1.5 million of his own people.
That's widely exaggerated.
The leftists all supported Bosnia, the invasion
let's
of Bosnia.
Let's go to China then. You know, we're the police of the world. Let's take them on.
Did you support the invasion of Bosnia?
I did. In Kosovo, and that was a clear case. I mean, it's one thing to say we should have gone into Iraq in the 1980s, when Ronald Reagan was supporting Iraq, when Don Rumsfeld was supporting Iraq, when Dick Cheney and Halliburton were making deals with Saddam Hussein, because that's when he was killing people. But there were no massacres. There were no massacres from 91 to 04. Do you know of any?
No, that's... From 95
guys,
to 04,
guys,
yeah,
I
absolutely.
I got to get back to work.
Okay, thanks very much. Hey, Diane,
wait,
thanks.
I just want to say one last thing.
Go ahead,
one
please.
One last point. There's nothing more important in the world right now to the survival of our lifestyle as we know it than energy. Okay? And to look at all these other distractions is nonsensical. Okay, have a great debate. Thanks,
Diane. I agree with you. Thanks very much for calling in. I want to go to one more caller. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Oh, hello. How you doing, Mark?
I'm good. How are you, sir?
I'm doing fine. I just find it amazing, laughable how this man thinks that our intelligence came up with that's the truth worthy of information. They have a black budget. That we don't even know how much they give these people. Now they're going to give them the benefit of the doubt to saying that we don't know now. I mean, we'll be spending $25 million over there just to try to find out what Saddam Hussein is. Who knows how much we're spending for Bin Laden. This man's trying to tell me that we are the greatest country in the world and we don't know what we're doing
with
our intelligence. You're saying that intelligence is lacking. I'm saying, like, how in the world can intelligence be lacking when we have the greatest country in the world? We spend more money than we know how much we're spending on intelligence to know who, what, where, and everything in this world.
Yeah, well, we are spending a tremendous money on intelligence.
It's just laughable. This man is telling me now that the intelligence now needs to be upgraded. We constantly spend money on what's going on in the world.
Yeah, thank you, Carl. I appreciate that. Jeff, I think the point is that we spend all kinds of money on intelligence, and shouldn't we be focusing on, you know, okay, why is it that we have 10,000 troops in Afghanistan and 140,000 in Iraq? Is Iraq 14 times more dangerous than Al-Qaeda?
No, Mark, of course. We have in Afghanistan what we need in Afghanistan. There's no greater call for more troops over there. It's not
there
the nature
isn't?
Of the war over there. There are small bands of Taliban and Al-Qaeda. They're being chased down by American hunter-killer squads. But what we don't need is a gigantic land war over there. Frankly, I'm glad that we've learned the lessons of the Russians and aren't just sending in thousands and thousands of troops.
I think that what Richard Clark said was right. I think what he said is that the reason we are not getting Al-Qaeda right now is because of this tremendous focus on Iraq. And that's the reason why we still haven't captured Osama bin Laden. We're just now, Pakistan's just starting to go after the number two in the border area. Pakistan could use our help. Afghanistan could use our help. We've got to fight the terrorists where they live instead of picking new battles that, frankly, I believe create more terrorists than we have before. Jeff, we got to go to another commercial break, but I want to hear from you callers. The number here is 877-57-SCOOP, 877-577-2667, or you can email me by sending an email to Mark, M-A-R-K, at RadioInsideScoop.com, and we'll be back with more of the Inside Scoop right after these messages.
I'm John Anderson.
And I'm Sarah Turner.
Last night, Pennsylvania Governor Edward Rendell signed one of the toughest state anti-sweatshop laws in the country. The measure requires all state agencies to impose tough requirements on the contractors that make state uniforms, including the dictate that those contractors reveal just where uniforms are being made, so the state has the option of investigating labor practices on its own. Pennsylvania is the fifth state to approve a comprehensive anti-sweatshop policy for those involved in government business.
Salaries and benefits for 6,300 Northwest Airlines pilots may take a nosedive if members of the Airline Pilots Association agree to a proposed $200 million annual cut through 2006. The pilots are considering the cut in an effort to recoup some of the $2.2 billion Northwest has lost in the past 3 years. Northwest Airlines says even this 20% cut in salaries and benefits isn't enough. They're asking the pilots union, as well as AMFA, the machinist union, to give back a full $1 billion in concessions. The president of AMFA, Local 5, remains defiant. He says the word concession isn't in their dictionary.
Although the U.S. Department of Labor has yet to approve new rules that will exempt another 8 million workers from the right of overtime pay, some companies are already cutting back on OT. Most notably, the auto industry, where General Motors and several auto parts suppliers have already begun trimming overtime to salaried mid-level managers. According to an internal GM memo obtained by the Detroit News, the company set a target to slash its overtime-related expenses by 15% this year alone.
The U.S. Labor Education and the Americas Project, Human Rights Watch, the AFL-CIO, and the International Labor Rights Fund are calling for the Bush administration to halt negotiations on new trade agreements with Colombia and Ecuador, because these countries turn a blind eye to labor law violations. Colombia has the highest rate of trade unionists murdered in the world, 172 organizers in 2002, according to Colombia's Trade Union Congress.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. If British researchers in continuing education did their math correctly, those who enter the workforce 20 years from now can expect to work in 19 different jobs over their lifetime. Not only that, the number of people working two or more jobs is expected to double by 2025. Those projections are heavily influenced by two factors, a rising life expectancy coupled with underfunded pensions and individual retirement savings.
You've been listening to WIND, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Back here on the Inside Scoop, I'm your host, Mark Levine. We're talking about the one-year anniversary of Iraq, and I'm debating with a conservative from Young America's Foundation. Program officer there, his name is Jeff Meredith. We're arguing about Iraq, and I want to hear from you. I want to know what you think. The number here is 877-577-2667. That's 877-57-SCOOP, 57-S-C-O-O-P. You can also send me an email, and I'll read your email on the air. Send an email, send to Mark, M-A-R-K, at RadioInsideScoop.com. And we're talking about the war in Iraq. It's been 1 year since George Bush sent troops to Iraq. And at that time, they made it clear, the administration, this was going to be a fairly easy thing. They were talking about in May, just a month and a half after the war was done, Bush already appeared on a warship with a big sign saying mission accomplished. I guess he thought the war was over then. So we had all these things that they said were true, and I just want to run down a list of them, and I want to hear how Jeff can respond to them. We got a whole list of things the administration has said about Iraq. They said they had chemical weapons. They said they had biological weapons. They said they were seeking uranium from Niger. Bush administration officials said, gave specifics. They said there were a specific number of tons of sarin, of botulinum toxin. They said that the Iraqis had unmanned planes that could attack the United States. They said we'd be greeted as liberators when we came there. They said that the cost would be approximately $7 billion. It's turned out to be more like $170 billion. They didn't think it would require the troops they would require. They didn't prepare to have the body armor there that would require. And they thought that the whole thing would turn out to be a democracy. I don't know if any of that is true, but I know that Jeff Meredith defends the administration, and I want to thank him very much for coming on my program. Jeff, do you think that these statements by administration, how can you believe an administration that told us all these things that turned out to be not true?
Well, again, I tend to agree with not only the Bush administration, but also the Clinton administration, John Kerry, Al Gore, Hillary Clinton, that Saddam had these weapons at one point or another.
At France, one point or
Syria,
another.
Germany, and Russia also all supported that same belief when Resolution 1441 was passed.
He had these weapons in the 80s. He had these weapons up until the Gulf War.
And according to every single intelligence agency on this planet, he had them in...
No, you're wrong, Jeff. What the intelligence agency said is that he might have them. And every national... In fact, what's interesting is that Colin Powell was asked in February 2001 whether he considered Saddam Hussein a threat. He was asked in Egypt, and he said no. In the national intelligence estimate of 2001, Iraq is not even mentioned when they go over the potential threats to the United States. Not even mentioned. Then comes 2002. Then comes Karl Rove saying we need an election issue. We haven't managed to catch Osama bin Laden. And suddenly Iraq appears in a national intelligence estimate. And what does that estimate say? It says in the original, it says, well, we've got a couple sources that think they know something. We've got people like Chalabi, the Iraqi exile that wanted to be installed by the United States. And, hey, you know, we installed him. We installed him into power, and he said that he thought there were some weapons there. And what happened was you took the idea that there might be weapons, and it became a sure thing. It became bulletproof. You had – and people were using those words. You had Cheney. You had Powell. I mean, when Powell went to the United Nations, all right, let's go over some of the things he said to the United Nations. He said, quote, the gravity of this moment is matched by the gravity of the threat the Iraq's weapons of mass destruction pose to the world. He said that they are real and present dangers to the region and the world. He said leaving Saddam Hussein in possession of weapons of mass destruction for a few months or years is not an option. And he went on to say, quote, every statement I make today is backed up by sources, solid sources. These are not assertions. What we're giving you are facts and conclusions based on solid evidence. And he gave specifics. He said there was an Iraq civil engineer knowledgeable about the biological agent program who confirmed that there were transportable facilities moving in trailers. He said there was a human source who corroborated the movement of chemical weapons in May 2002. He said that there was an eyewitness who saw prisoners being experimented on to perfect biological or chemical weapons. And he said, fifth, that there's a source that said there was a missile brigade outside Baghdad that was dispersing warheads containing biological warfare agents to various locations in western Iraq. And my question is this. If these sources were credible, if they are credible, then they have no reason to fear today. Saddam Hussein is gone. Where are these sources? Who are they? Why aren't they going public? Why isn't the Bush administration trotting them out and putting them before our face, or at least having them talk to David Kaye? How, if these sources are credible, where are they today? What do you think, Jeff?
You know, Mark, I think that's a great question. I don't know where they are today. Frankly, obviously, no one in the world knows where they are today. All that really means is that Saddam Hussein has had a chance to move them beyond as far as our intelligence extends. And, you know, the last caller talked about intelligence, which is a very imperfect science, but there was not a single nation in the world that said Iraq did not have weapons of mass destruction. That's why in Resolution 1441, where the specific wording said Iraq had to disarm or face serious consequences, even Syria and France and Germany voted for it.
and they voted for it so we could send inspectors in. The inspectors found nothing. David Kaye later found nothing. And the United Nations did not find enough evidence. Any of those nations you just mentioned did not think there was enough evidence to go to war.
So where have they gone?
I don't think they were ever there to begin with.
But we know that he had them before. We know that he used them before.
No. See, your problem is, I think, Jeff, that you're believing what the administration did. We know now that the administration changed the intelligence.
Mark, your problem is that you believe Saddam Hussein.
No.
That's even more ridiculous.
I believe the CIA junior officers who are telling me and telling the Washington Post as well that they came and they said there's no evidence of Saddam Hussein having these weapons, and Cheney was going down and saying, you know, don't bring me no bad news. I don't like what you're saying. You go back and try again. But Richard Clark, the head of the counterterrorism, says on 60 Minutes yesterday that, Mr. President, there is no connection between Saddam Hussein and al-Qaeda, and George Bush is saying, you go back and you find me one. That, to me, shows that this is not an administration that took the intelligence and used it to decide whether to go to war. This is an administration that decided to go to war first and then used the intelligence to see whether it could back it up.
Look, Saddam had every chance to get out of this war. He could have allowed the inspectors in to have the full access that they were promised.
He did allow the inspectors in. I love this sort of backtracking, imagining past that didn't happen. In 2002, read your newspapers, he did allow the inspectors in. I want to go to a caller. Caller, you're on the air. Where are you from? What's your name?
Ben Geiser.
Ed, where are you from? Ben, I'm sorry.
Ben. I'm from L.A.
From L.A. Tell me, what do you think about this debate?
Well, I think a big problem is, I mean, if Clinton had the chance to kill bin Laden back in when he was president, if he would have done that, 9/11 would have been blamed on him, saying that the whole reason that happened was that he upset the terrorists. If Bush wouldn't go into Iraq and they did something, it would then be blamed on Bush. So it's a lose-lose situation no matter what you do.
Well, you know, that's an interesting point. If Clinton had gone in and killed bin Laden and then 9/11 happened, he might have been blamed for it. You know, that's really interesting because I remember back when Clinton did react in 98 and people were very strongly, very angry at him. How dare he attack Afghanistan? How dare he attack Iraq when, you know, he should be focused on Monica? So I think you raise a good point.
Well, I mean, and it's not just that. I mean, it swings the other way, too. We can't sit here and say that we shouldn't have went to Iraq, because if something would have happened, I mean, and it very well could have, then Bush would be blamed for not going there and doing something about it.
But see, I don't.
So
the difference is
it's like a flip flop. I mean, I don't know which position to take of whether you do something or whether you don't do something.
Well, I think the answer is that you have intelligence is imperfect, but we have these intelligence estimates, and we have them for a reason. And what the intelligence estimates are saying is that who is a threat and who isn't. If you read Richard Clark's book, and I haven't read it yet, but I heard him on 60 Minutes last night, what Richard Clark is saying is that Iraq wasn't the kind of threat al-Qaeda was, and that he was trying to tell the Bush administration that al-Qaeda was a threat, and they wouldn't even let him meet with cabinet secretaries. They wouldn't let him meet with the president. They wouldn't let him meet with cabinet secretaries. He told Undersecretary Paul Wolfowitz, and Wolfowitz said, you know, why are you worrying about this little guy here, meaning Osama bin Laden? Why aren't you worrying about Saddam Hussein? So we have the intelligence, and it's coming up to the CIA, to our counterterrorism units. They know who's more dangerous. We just didn't have a president who was willing to focus on it. That's my
opinion. When Clark was under Clinton, he had the chance to tell Clinton to go get bin Laden that they were going to give him bin Laden, and he advised him no.
You're saying Clinton advised him no?
No.
Clark
advised Clinton not to go get him. I mean, if he's going to say now that Osama bin Laden, why didn't he advise Clinton to get him when
he did advise
Some country was offering to give him to us.
No,
they had information or something of where he was, and we could have went and got him, and they said no.
No, what happened was, and that's been talked about a lot, and it's a misnomer. What happened was in Sudan, there was a group, a Sudanese group, that said that the Sudanese government would turn over Osama bin Laden. Clinton checked with the Sudanese government, and the government said, no, that group is not speaking for us. And that's the only example I'm aware of, though I know it's trotted out by the Republicans again and again. Clinton was not handed Osama bin Laden on a silver platter. That just wasn't the case. I know that there was also concern in the Clinton administration that at the time, and this was again before the bombings in Kenya and before the USS Cole bombing, he was also concerned about the legality of the move. And I think we can all agree that a president shouldn't do something illegal, that if he thinks that something is justified, he should go and get the legal way to do it.
Mm-hmm.
But thanks for your call. I want to see if I can get Jeff back on the line here.
Mark?
Yes, is that you?
Yeah, hey.
Sorry about that. Did you hear the caller?
I sure did. There's a couple things I want to comment on.
Yeah.
First of all, I think it's absurd to say that Bill Clinton was this great terrorist fighter. His answer after some of the terrorist attacks was to blow up an aspirin factory in Somalia. He launched a couple of missiles in Afghanistan. You know, if Clinton had the courage to launch a preemptive war in Afghanistan, 9/11 probably would have never happened.
Let's talk about this, because the USS Cole bombing occurred in, I believe it was October 2000. Correct me if I'm wrong. I know it was the end of 2000. And by December of 2000, Clinton had a plan to go after al-Qaeda. It involved the exact same stuff that Bush ended up doing. It involved arming the Northern Alliance, helping them, giving them air support, going in, taking out al-Qaeda. And by the way, folks, you can look this up yourself. There's a wonderful article, Time Magazine, April 2002. Look it up. It goes through this in detail. Sandy Berger only had one personal meeting with Condoleezza Rice. Only one. The outgoing National Security Advisor only met personally with the incoming National Security Advisor once. And he said in that meeting, you got to worry about al-Qaeda. Al-Qaeda is by far the most serious threat to the United States. If there's anything you have to work on, it's al-Qaeda. And Condoleezza Rice wasn't interested. And the same thing is happening with Richard Clark. The Bush administration wasn't interested. They couldn't get their minds off Iraq to focus on the fact that there was another far more serious threat to the United States. And that's all. Not only did I report this, by the way, back in July 2003, but now more and more documents are coming out. I don't have to rely on my secret sources anymore. More and more documents are coming out to say this is precisely the case. The Bush administration was warned. They were warned there could be a terrible attack on 9/11. And we're going to find out with the 9/11 Commission exactly what Bush knew and when he knew it. And I think that's why Bush is stonewalling.
But, Mark, I think it's fairly ridiculous, again, to say now that Bill Clinton had this amazing plan that would have saved us from 9/11 if only it had gone into effect. This is just typical of Bill Clinton, always having a plan but never doing anything.
It was December
what about the World Trade Center bombing? What about our embassies in Africa being blown up?
You can show
what about
me
the Khobar Towers?
There's
8 or 9 distinct terrorist attacks, and what was the guy's response? He blew up an aspirin factory.
Now
not only do you have angry terrorists, you have a bunch of people who probably have headaches. Bill Clinton contributed more to the terrorist problem than George Bush has done.
Oh, come on, that's not true at all. And I want to get to our caller. But Jeff, look, if you could show me there was specific intelligence that Clinton ignored, I want to see it. But what we do know is that Clinton was warned that they were going to do an attack in 1999 on New Year's. You may remember this. You know, people talked about it. They were talked about. People hardly remember now the computer problems. Remember 2K? We were going to have this Y2K problem, computer virus. And people also talked that they were worried about a terrorist attack on December 31st, 1999. And that attack came. Two members of al-Qaeda came in the United States across the Canadian border planning to blow up Los Angeles International Airport. And Clinton, to his credit, sent out directives down to the lowest person. You've got to watch for these people. And we caught those terrorists. And then when after the USS Cole bombing, he had a specific plan in place. And maybe Clinton was wrong not to just begin a war in December 2000. Maybe he should have known that George Bush couldn't be trusted to complete that war. But what he said was, look, George Bush Sr. in Somalia started a war that Clinton had to finish. He didn't want to start a war in December 2000 that George Bush had to finish. He instead wanted to give him all the information and see that he'd go through with it. And Bush, to his discredit, I say, didn't. But I want to get to a caller. Caller, you're on the air. What's your name? Where are you from?
My name's Pete, and I'm from Cornwall and Hudson, New York.
Okay. Thanks, Pete, for calling in. What's your comment about all this?
Well, I have a couple of comments. Number one, Jeff said a couple times Clinton didn't do anything about WTC bombing in 1993.
Yeah, it was
93. Ramzi Youssef and five others were convicted to life, on plus 240 years for the bombing.
That's true.
As for the Khobar Towers, Justice Department announced the indictment of 14 individuals, and that was with the help of the Clinton administration. And the end of embassy bombings in the U.S. Cole was the fault of the al-Qaeda, and of course, Sandy Berger did hand that off to Condoleezza Rice. So to say that nothing was done by Clinton, I don't think that's fair, Jeff. But otherwise, I think you're representing your side of the story very well. The other thing I want to say is beyond
all of this. I'll give Jeff a chance to respond. Hang on, caller, and then we'll get to your second point. All right?
Okay.
Jeff,
all right.
What
well, again, this is you know, five men were prosecuted and put away for life, and that's frankly quite great regarding the World Trade Center bombing.
Uh-huh.
But these are five men in a vast terrorist network. And if we had pursued that network further, 9/11 would not have happened. Ramzi Youssef is a cousin of one of the major Al-Qaeda terrorists.
Jeff, you know that for a fact.
Yeah, that's
you
news.
Know that for
these
a
guys
fact.
Were terrorists. They weren't just five individuals. This wasn't a Timothy McVeigh type thing.
If this happened back then, you know that for a fact.
No, I don't think anybody
Thank
knew
you,
it for
Jeff.
A fact. They should have pursued it further.
Thank you, Jeff. You don't know that. And we didn't know that back then either. And everybody was acting on their best information. There's no doubt about that.
I think if they knew that they had gone straight back to Pakistan, where the Clinton administration had to have known that terrorist organizations were living freely, that they should have known that this was probably not going to be a one-time thing.
How many times in life have you said to yourself, if I knew then what I know now? And that's what you're doing right now, Jeff, and it's not totally fair.
You know, obviously, I'm not the president of the United States, and I would, if I was him, I would have had a responsibility to protect Americans with every last bit of strength I had, and that would involve more than prosecuting a couple of criminals a couple of years later.
And
it would have involved trying to completely destroy the entire infrastructure of the terrorists who planned that attack.
Is your dislike for Bill Clinton so complete that you think that he didn't want to protect this nation with every bit of his powers?
No, absolutely not. If he
That's
had, he would have fully armed our soldiers in Mogadishu instead of not giving them any air cover. I think that movie...
The movie
explained that, but that was accurate. Bill Clinton did not fully arm the soldiers. He didn't give them any air cover.
And it was a no-win situation?
Well, you know what? The biggest no-win situation is losing American lives. We could have done a better job by at least wiping out the terrorists instead of suffering 18 American casualties. Where if we had more firepower, we wouldn't have suffered that.
If I could join in here, I think one of the big problems is we're losing American lives in Iraq and we're not making it safer. I want to get to your second point. Let me just give the number out one more time so we get other callers joining in. The number is 877-57-SCOOP. It's a toll-free number, 877-577-2667. You can join in this debate yourself, and I want to hear from you. Pete, you have a second point to make. What was that?
The second point is this. It's beyond all the justifications or reasonings or blame or finger-pointing or whatever. Beyond that point is, okay, we're in Iraq, and if we can work our way out and establish some sort of stable government, that would be great. Now, I asked the question, I just asked the question to both of you. What do you think, under what conditions is the United States going to leave Iraq? Will they just say, well, thanks very much, we settled, we got your government going, we stabilized your country, thanks so much, folks? Or do you think that they have certain imperatives that they will not leave Iraq until they get? My thinking is there are three imperatives. Number one, establish a government friendly to the United States. Number two, direct access to the oil. And number three, at least one, if not two, military bases in Iraq. And I believe we don't leave until we get at least two of those. And I believe that there's big trouble coming because I don't think the people of Iraq are going to want to give it to us.
I don't think they are either. One of the interesting things is that Bush is always talking about how he wants democracy in Iraq and how he thinks the Iraqi people should be in charge, and he doesn't think they should be under the control of one person. But what he rarely points out is that George Bush himself appointed the Iraqi government. He appointed every member of the provisional government. In other words, one person is still in charge of Iraq. It's a different person, you know, someone not as bad as Saddam Hussein, but it ain't democracy by any stretch.
Well, Mark, you said the key word right there, because it's a provisional government, there's elections coming, and there was just not the infrastructure to have direct elections, you know, 2 weeks after a war ended.
Did you notice, Jeff, that he got a six-month extension till right after the American elections? Do you think there was anything, connection that Bush pressed the Shiite leader Sistani really, really hard just so he could get the Iraqi elections after the American elections? Do you think that was just coincidence?
Yeah, absolutely. I don't think that has anything to do with it. What bearing on the American political scene is an Iraqi
election
government
I'll
going
tell you
to
what,
have?
I'll tell you what bearing is. When they elect a theocracy, like they did in Iran, the Shiites are 60% of the population. I think it's quite possible they elect a mullah who doesn't support women's rights, who doesn't support, certainly doesn't support separation of church and state, I'm sure. And when we get an Iran-type theocracy, that's going to make us look really bad. And because the Iraqi people may well vote, and I think it's quite possible they're going to vote for a theocracy, and I think Bush wants to make sure that happens after the November 2004 elections.
Well, the most recent Wall Street Journal poll showed that Shiites rejected theocracy by 60% to 27%. So I don't think that's the biggest concern at the moment.
The poll
could
also showed that they're more anti-American than pro-American. Pete, go ahead.
Yeah, could I ask you guys to focus on what I brought up as far as the three imperatives of concern?
Well, okay.
What do you guys think about that? And if we have those imperatives and don't get them, do we have the seeds for more war and violence because we're not going to leave?
Well, let's deal with them one at a time. I think the most important thing you mentioned, at least in my mind, is oil. I agree with you, Pete, that if we don't control the oil fields, we won't leave Iraq. Do you agree with that, Jeff?
No, not necessarily. I think most likely the Iraqis will be happy to sell us their oil in an economic relationship. But I think that Pete's most important point is about establishing a friendly government there. I think that unless a friendly government has been established, we won't leave. But I think that we've seen phenomenal progress towards establishing it.
How about the two bases too?
I've
heard that discussed already.
Yeah, I think we'll want military bases in Iraq. I that wouldn't surprise me. But I don't. To me, the problem is the contradiction between saying you support democracy in Iraq and saying you support a friendly government. Sometimes the people vote for – it's happened in Spain, right? They vote for a government that doesn't support the United States. And then I'll be curious to see what the Bush administration does. What do you think, Jeff, the Bush administration should do if the Iraqi people in a free and fair election vote in an anti-American government?
Well, frankly, I find that very hard to imagine. Right now, America is wildly popular. In fact,
they are not wildly popular.
We are too. Look, the most recent poll asked the Iraqi people, what nation would you like Iraq to be based upon most, Egypt, Syria, or Saudi Arabia, or the United States of America? America won overwhelmingly.
That's some choice.
Well, what else do you want to be on the ballot, North
well,
Korea?
Well, how about this? Do you think it was a good idea to have Americans there? And they overwhelmingly say no. They overwhelmingly say it's time for America to go home. Thank you. Thank you. Now go home.
They overwhelmingly also say that this war was a good thing, that life is a lot better now, and that 5 years from now it'll be even better because they know we are going to go home. And I haven't seen anything that says they want us to leave now. I've seen plenty of polls that suggest that they want us to stay there to provide security for a bit longer.
Yeah, I think Jeff is right because we don't realize that the roadside bomb is really the Iraqi form of welcome.
No, look, you guys both know that there are foreign fighters streaming into Iraq at an incredible rate. This is the new front on the war on terror, and this is why terrorists aren't coming to America. And to accuse the entire Iraqi public of putting out roadside bombs is offensive. The vast majority of Iraqis are peace-loving people who are glad we're there.
Recently,
to blackball all of them as terrorists is wrong.
Just recently, within the last 2 weeks, either Tenet or a high-ranked general in Iraq said, we thought that a lot of these things were happening from foreign insurgents. We now don't think so. We don't have. We think it's more Iraqi insurgents. So the evidence of people streaming in hasn't been acknowledged or documented.
Actually, I think it's both. I think it's both. My impression is that there was zero al-Qaeda support for Iraq prior to the Iraqi war. In fact, they hated each other because Saddam Hussein was secular and al-Qaeda believed in Islamic theocracy, and they didn't get along. They didn't fight each other, and there was zero support. My understanding now is that we are being attacked in Iraq by both native Iraqis who don't want us to invade, who want our occupiers out, and also al-Qaeda, who is sending operatives in. So my understanding is it's both, and my whole point about all of the Iraqi war is how has this helped America? I mean, I'm sure that it's good that Saddam Hussein is gone for Iraqi people, but how does it help America to make the whole world so inflamed, so angry at us for doing this elective war that we get more terrorists, that we get more recruitment? I mean, if anything, we're playing, I think, into Osama bin Laden's hands. We are showing the Arab world, hey, we attack even when we're not provoked. We attack even when we're not attacked, and help them create and recruit more terrorists.
Well, Mark, the bottom line is America was provoked on 9/11. Just because
Saddam Hussein
staged that attack does not mean that he doesn't inhabit a candy shop of terrorism.
Now, wait a minute. You're arguing that because Afghanistan attacked us. It's justified for us to attack Iraq.
Okay, let me ask you this then. Would you have supported a war on Afghanistan before 9/11?
I would have supported us aiding the Northern Alliance as Clinton planned to do, giving significant aid to help them overthrow the Taliban.
But the principle is the same. If you're aiding one enemy, then you might as well be committing to it because you're committing to their cause.
But the Taliban attacked us. Al-Qaeda attacked
us. The Alliance would have done is nothing at all. It would have just continued the civil war.
But they attacked us in Yemen. They killed American citizens. I mean, that's why Clinton had the plan to go get them.
So do you think that because Saddam Hussein helped terrorists kill Americans in Israel, then we should have the right to go get him
too?
That's the same principle.
Saddam Hussein gave money to Palestinian terrorists that were trying to kill Jews in Israel and killed Americans. Now, if you're going to say that because of that, Saddam Hussein has to be overthrown, you've got to overthrow 23 Arab countries that give money to the PLO, and frankly, so do European nations. They also give money to the PLO that has killed Americans in Israel.
But that's not what I was saying. I asked you a question. Would you have supported a preemptive war in Afghanistan?
Excuse me, are you talking about an unprovoked and illegal war in the eyes of the world court and the United Nations?
See, I don't think it would have been.
Well, the United Nations is not sovereign over America, and what they say
is
illegal is, frankly, not binding on our country.
It would have been an unprovoked war. I mean, you know, if that would be just like us attacking Venezuela because we didn't like something about it.
But that's exactly my point.
How could you
possibly... If we had invaded Afghanistan before 9/11, 9/11 very likely would not have ever happened, and yet it would be called a preemptive war. Bush has decided to learn the lesson from 9/11 by attacking Iraq, a country that has sworn to hurt us if possible, even tried to assassinate a former president of America.
Our forefathers turning in their graves at the thought of us attacking another country unprovoked.
Hold on. I got to go to a commercial. I want you to both hold on. These are great points you're making. My own belief is that it was not unprovoked because we were attacked in Yemen with USS Cole, and therefore an attack on Afghanistan would be justified. But I'll give you both a chance to comment right after these messages.
State anti-sweat shop laws in the country. The measure requires all state agencies to impose tough requirements on the contractors that make state uniforms, including the dictate that those contractors reveal just where uniforms are being made, so the state has the option of investigating labor practices on its own. Pennsylvania is the fifth state to approve a comprehensive anti-sweatshop policy for those involved in government business.
Salaries and benefits for 6,300 Northwest Airlines pilots may take a nosedive if members of the Airline Pilots Association agree to a proposed $200 million annual cut through 2006. The pilots are considering the cut in an effort to recoup some of the $2.2 billion Northwest has lost in the past 3 years. Northwest Airlines says even this 20% cut in salaries and benefits isn't enough. They're asking the pilots union, as well as AMPA, the machinist union, to give back a full $1 billion in concessions. The president of AMPA, Local 5, remains defiant. He says the word concession isn't in their dictionary.
Although the U.S. Department of Labor has yet to approve new rules that will exempt another 8 million workers from the right of overtime pay, some companies are already cutting back on OT. Most notably, the auto industry, where General Motors and several auto parts suppliers have already begun trimming overtime to salaried mid-level managers. According to an internal GM memo obtained by the Detroit News, the company set a target to slash its overtime-related expenses by 15% this year alone.
The U.S. Labor Education and the Americas Project, Human Rights Watch, the AFL-CIO, and the International Labor Rights Fund are calling for the Bush administration to halt negotiations on new trade agreements with Colombia and Ecuador, because these countries turn a blind eye to labor law violations. Colombia has the highest rate of trade unionists murdered in the world, 172 organizers in 2002, according to Colombia's Trade Union Congress.
Here's today's Davao Report. If British researchers in continuing education did their math correctly, those who enter the workforce 20 years from now can expect to work in 19 different jobs over their lifetime. Not only that, the number of people working two or more jobs is expected to double by 2025. Those projections are heavily influenced by two factors, a rising life expectancy coupled with underfunded pensions and individual retirement savings.
You've been listening to WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Hello, America. This is Mark Levine of the Inside Scoop. I have been on the air weekdays now, all of one day. Today's my first day on the air on weekdays. I have a regular show on Sunday nights on WAGE. It's also broadcast on radiopower.org. And if you've noticed, I have very few commercials right now, and the reason for that is this is a new show, and I need your support. If you want to advertise to all Radio Power listeners, you want to hear progressive listeners and get them to buy your products, all you have to do is send me an email, send it to advertise@radioinsidescoop.com, and you too can get your ads on the air. Join my Sunday listeners. They've had tremendous results, and I hope that you will advertise on the Inside Scoop. We'll be back with more of the Inside Scoop right after this.
This is Don Waller in New York. George W. Bush ignored the threat of Al-Qaeda for months and did too little to stop the September 11th attacks on the United States, a former administration counterterrorism official said Sunday. Richard Clark's accusations, aired in a CBS 60 Minutes interview, drew a detailed point-by-point rebuttal from the White House as it attempted to defend Bush's standing as a presidential candidate who was tough on terrorism. In the program on his book to be launched Monday, Clark charged that Bush had done a terrible job in addressing the threat from terrorism. Former President Jimmy Carter has strongly criticized George Bush and Tony Blair for waging an unnecessary war to oust Saddam Hussein based on lies or misinterpretations. The 2002 Nobel Peace Prize winner said Mr. Blair had allowed his better judgment to be swayed by Mr. Bush's desire to finish a war that his father had started. In an interview with the British newspaper The Independent on the first anniversary of the American and British invasion of Iraq, Carter said the Iraq war was based on lies and misinterpretations from London and from Washington, claiming falsely that Saddam Hussein was responsible for the 9/11 attacks and claiming falsely that Iraq had weapons of mass destruction. Reports that led to charges against six U.S. soldiers accused of abusing detainees at Iraq's Abu Ghraib prison came from within the military, not from prisoner complaints, a senior U.S. military official said Sunday. The soldiers, members of a military police unit, were charged Saturday with a range of crimes, including conspiracy, dereliction of duty, cruelty and maltreatment, assault, and indecent acts with another person. The military said about 20 detainees at the prison on the western outskirts of Baghdad were involved. Israel killed Hamas founder Ahmed Yassin in a helicopter missile strike outside a Gaza City mosque Monday, prompting threats of unprecedented revenge by Palestinian militants against Israel and the United States. Yassin was the most prominent Palestinian leader killed by Israel in more than 3 years of fighting, and his assassination was seen as a major escalation. More Minuteman news after this.
I'm Oscar. You have a position in that.
We're back here on the Inside Scoop. I'm your host, Mark Levine. We're talking about the Iraq War. It's been 1 year since the anniversary of Iraq, and I want to know from you if you think we're any safer. Is America better off now that we've fought this war? Or maybe should we have gone after people who are more of a danger to the United States? Has it taken the focus off Al-Qaeda for us to go to war in Iraq? And I want to hear your calls. The number is 877-57-SCOOP. That's 877-577-2667. I've been arguing this hour and a half with Jeff Meredith. He is with Young Americas Foundation, a conservative think tank. And I've also been talking with Pete. He is from New York, and he's a caller. And Pete, since I've been arguing with Jeff all this time, I'll let you have your word. Go ahead.
I don't know, where were we? I guess we were talking about whether or not attacking Afghanistan before 9/11 would have been a viable idea. I don't think the world would have been ready for that thought, given that terrorism wasn't rearing its ugly head. I would think it would have been seen as an illegal, preemptive war. Prior to 9/11, the thought of a preemptive war was simply international bullyism, imperialism.
I
think it's looking back saying, you know, if we knew then what we know now, we should have done this, and I just don't think that worked.
Pete, I agree with you about preemptive war. I think it's extremely dangerous and that it should only be done under the most clearest of circumstances, which this clearly wasn't. I don't think, though, that an attack on Afghanistan in December of 2000 would have been considered preemptive war, because I think there was enough evidence that Afghanistan had gone after the military ship, that in fact the Taliban-funded al-Qaeda had gone after the USS Cole at Yemen, and that was an attack on our military ship, and so I think the world probably would have understood that we were responding to that.
Well, I do know that some sort of response was being considered by the Clinton administration, but being an outgoing administration,
that's exactly right.
It was made not to hand a war off to an incoming president.
That's exactly right.
Wait a couple months and let them take care of it.
That's exactly right. And that's the plan they developed, and that's the plan that Sandy Berger presented to Condoleezza Rice. Do you have any more, Pete? I'm going to get back to Jeff.
No. Great show.
Thanks. Thanks for calling in.
Thanks, guys. Good work, Jeff.
Thanks. I hope you'll call in regularly.
I'll try.
Okay.
Thanks. Well, Mark, here's...
Go ahead.
Look, you know, when Hitler invaded Czechoslovakia and Poland, France and England declared preemptive war on Germany. And yet that was certainly called for, wasn't it? Yet
well,
they had one teeny tiny bit.
No, wait a minute. They had treaties with Poland. They had specific treaties with Poland saying if Poland was attacked, they would come to their defense. So.
All right. Well, Saddam Hussein had treaties allowing inspectors for 12 years.
Right. And I supported the inspectors. See, that's the thing. You can't say that liberals or Democrats didn't support inspectors. I think just about all of us supported keeping Saddam Hussein contained. The trick is he was contained. He was contained just frankly like Libya. Muammar Gaddafi was contained. And the people that are going out and killing us, al-Qaeda, or Saudi Arabia, which is aiding them, or North Korea, which is doing all kinds of things. I mean, what's interesting to me is that when Iran is developing nuclear weapons, we, again, were so busy with Iraq that we barely did anything, and it took our European allies, these same allies that I think you think are cowardly or not willing to do anything, it took them to restrain Iran. So, you know, I don't think it's that our European allies are sitting there saying, well, you know, this is appeasement like Munich, like Hitler. I think they understand that when there's a real threat and there's not a real threat. We got time for more callers if you want to call in. 877-57-SCOOP, 877-577-2667. You have the floor, Jeff.
All right. Well, it depends on how your definition of threat goes. Obviously, Iraq was never going to have a military that could literally conquer America. The threat, of course, was in terrorism. Saddam Hussein could very, very easily pass off very serious weapons to terrorists to hit either the Israelis, one of our allies that we have a treaty with, or Americans right here at home.
Okay,
9/11 changed everything. We couldn't wait any longer for bad people to come and punch us in the face before we got involved.
Okay, but there are 30 or 40 or 50 dictatorships on Earth. Do we invade them all?
No, not everyone has it in for us. Those of
a lot
that
of them
we
do.
Know are planning to hurt us, as the Afghan, as the Taliban and al-Qaeda were.
How did Iraq have it in for us any more than Saudi Arabia or Syria, or any of Israel's other enemies? How did Iraq specifically want to hurt America?
I mean, there's so many ways. For starters, they used to shoot at our planes every single day.
Yeah, we were overflying their territory pursuant to the United Nations resolutions, and they were shooting at our planes.
Yeah,
that's not a good
thing. They had to accept these no-fly zones. That was part of the treaty they signed. They were breaking the treaty once again.
And we had every right.
They tried to assassinate George Bush.
In 1993. And you know what's interesting about that? You know what's interesting about that is when they tried to assassinate George Bush Sr., we made it very clear to them that we would not tolerate any further terrorist attacks, anything like that. The Clinton administration made that very clear to Saddam Hussein. This, again, you can find in Richard Clark's book. And after we made that very clear to Saddam Hussein, guess what? He stopped. No more terrorist attacks in 10 years since 1993. Not a single attack on an American citizen since that attempted assassination of George Bush, and since Bill Clinton made it very clear that we wouldn't tolerate those attacks.
Oh, look, this was just more finger-wagging from Bill Clinton.
We had,
an act of war, an attempted assassination of an American president, and Bill Clinton's response was, you better not do that again, otherwise you'll be in big trouble.
Well,
whatever.
He didn't,
that's
did
the
he?
Thing he said every single time we faced a terrorist attack. Every single time America was hit, or one of our territories or embassies was hit, Bill Clinton said, we're going to bring the terrorists to justice. How many terrorists did he bring to justice? Well, maybe five.
Well,
maybe.
The ones that attacked the World Trade Center, the ones that attacked Khobar Tower. I mean, you know, it seems to me you're talking out of both sides of your mouth. You're saying that Clinton didn't do enough, and at the same time, you know, here we have a plan by Bill Clinton to attack al-Qaeda that Bush refused, and somehow that's justified. Do you think it's justified that Condoleezza Rice refused Sandy Berger's plan to attack al-Qaeda?
No. Look.
Okay, so we agree that they should have...
Mark, come on. You can't take this guy Clark as a serious...
It's not just Clark.
He's a politician here. He was a career bureaucrat. He's a total liberal. I don't care if he's registered as a Republican.
A total liberal. Why did Ronald Reagan first appoint him? Come on. I mean, all this, it's funny. You know, the Republicans did the same thing with Paul O'Neill. Here's a Republican. He's a Treasury Secretary.
He's a Democrat.
Paul O'Neill.
Yes.
Okay, he was, I don't think that's true.
He's always been a Democrat. The New York Times was thrilled when Bush hired Paul O'Neill because he was a Democrat. It was part of Bush's...
All right, I'll look that up. I don't think that's true, because my understanding... No, in fact, I know it's not true, because I remember that Bush hired only one Democrat in his administration, and that was Transportation Secretary, and that was the only Democrat. You know what? I'll tell you what, Jeff. You send me information that Paul O'Neill's a Democrat, and if you're right, I'll announce it on air tomorrow, okay?
All right, I'll look into that.
All right,
at any rate, Paul O'Neill is no conservative.
The point is this. Do you think he's a liar? Do you think he's a liar? Paul O'Neill showed a document that, by the way, Bush has not denied exists. That's a document dated January 30th, 2001, showing him splitting up the oil fields. We have the fact that Richard Clark says that the president wouldn't meet with him to talk about al-Qaeda. Do you think he's a liar?
The president should meet with him. He's a bureaucrat, and he said that the biggest...
He's not a bureaucrat. He's the
cyber terrorism.
He's the head of counterterrorism in the United States. He's the guy that was working with Clinton every day to stop the attacks in December 1999, and George Bush didn't meet with him till after 9/11, when he met with him and two other people in the room and insisted that 9/11 was caused by Iraq.
Now, Bush never insisted that. That's the thing. Bush has gone on TV and said from the beginning that Iraq was not responsible for 9/11.
Today. And by the way, he only did that in response to Vice President Dick Cheney continuing to say, hey, there may be a link. Listen, folks, if you want to join this conversation, the number is 877-57-SCOOP, 877-577-2667. Hey, Jeff, we only got a few moments left. I want to focus on the future. I want to know... What do you think is the future of Iraq? Do you think it's going to become this wonderful democracy?
You know, Mark, that's a great question. I really have no idea at all. I think that what we need to do, the future for America, should be to accomplish our mission, to set up that government and to get out of there. I don't support nation building. I think that we've done a good thing. I think that we've ended a candy shop of terrorism that was there. I think that terrorists aren't going to have free reign in Iraq anymore.
You keep saying a candy shop of terrorism, and yet Iraq committed no terrorist acts against Americans since 1993.
Well, sure. You know, technically, Afghanistan committed no terrorist acts either. Al-Qaeda is not a nation. Al-Qaeda is a group of men.
And they were not in Iraq.
They disappear, and they become invisible after
that. We can agree that Saddam Hussein wasn't helping Al-Qaeda, right?
I don't know if he was helping al-Qaeda.
There's no evidence
he was helping certain terrorists. That's absolutely for sure.
There's no evidence he was helping al-Qaeda.
What about Ansar al-Islam? I mean, you got to say, al-Qaeda and all these other terrorist groups are all linked. They're not just, well, here's al-Qaeda and our war on terror ends when we kill bin Laden.
Well, but if you're going to argue they're all linked, then really we've got to go after every single Arab country, because Algeria is a vicious, vicious government, massacred tens of thousands of their own people. Tunisia, Saudi Arabia is the worst country against women in the world now that the Taliban is gone. You've got Iran, which is a dictatorship, which has nuclear weapons, which is not helping its own people at all. You've got Syria, which has occupied Lebanon, is a brutal, brutal country. Even in Pakistan, our ally Musharraf doesn't respect democracy. He took power in a coup d'etat. And that's just the Arab world. You've also got countries in Africa. You've got Liberia. You've got South American countries. You've got North Korea.
Mark, you're missing the point. Democracy is not the goal of the war on terror. The goal of the war on terror is to destroy terrorists and to win it.
And I say we go after the ones that attacked Americans first. Hey, I got a caller on the air. Caller, you're on the line. What's your name? Where are you from?
Hi, I'm Ed.
Ed?
From Morris Plains.
Forest Plains, that New York?
Morris Plains, New Jersey.
Oh, New Jersey. Thanks for calling in, Ed. What's your comment?
I just want to make a quick comment. You were talking about how we should have just pursued a containment policy of Saddam.
Right.
I would like to assert the idea that the containment of Saddam is what cost 3,000 lives. Because to contain Saddam, we put troops in Saudi Arabia, and that was bin Laden's reason for being.
Well, okay. All right. I understand your point. I don't really agree with it. You are right that we had troops in Saudi Arabia largely as part of the containment of Iraq, and you are right that troops in Saudi Arabia is what made al-Qaeda mad. But
And now that we've defeated Saddam, we can take those troops out, and Osama bin Laden can leave us alone.
And you think he'll leave us alone now?
I think that there's a strategy for peace in the Middle East, and it involves pulling out of Saudi Arabia. We can do it.
I'm afraid I disagree with you. I think that because we went into Iraq, which is very different from us going into Afghanistan when the whole world saw we were attacked and fighting back, but because we went into an elective war with Iraq, we have caused more danger, more angry Arabs on the street, more because they can point at us and say, hey, you know, the United States, you may think it's a great country, but they went in and attacked a country that never attacked them. So,
right.
You know, while you're right that Osama bin Laden did care about us having troops in Saudi Arabia, I think that we're in much greater danger now, and that's indeed what Richard Clark, our counterterrorism expert, was saying.
Okay, well, I would go back to what Jeff said is, if you check the intelligence, we knew in 1990, if we instead of taking the 1993 World Trade Tower bombing and refer it to the Justice Department, if we did a CIA investigation, we would have found out that it led a little bit further than five men. And we would have gone after them 8 years ago instead of the 8 months of George Bush being president.
You know, we did go after them. We did do investigations. We did try to find out what they knew. There's no question that was on the trial. That's why Bill Clinton knew that al-Qaeda was threatening to get us. And by the way, so did George Bush. And that's why Bill Clinton he had a meeting every single day before December 31st, 1999, telling FBI, CIA, immigration officials, you need to look carefully who comes across our borders, and that's why we prevented the Los Angeles attack. What's interesting to me is that Bush gave none of those directives, and one immigration official, there was an interesting article in the Washington Post, just felt that this guy from Saudi Arabia, he didn't seem like he was there, right? He seemed very arrogant. He didn't have a reason for being in the United States, and he sent him back, and he was concerned because the Bush administration had said, be good to Saudi nationals. And
you know, in 1996, Bill Clinton won an election overwhelmingly. He won by a pretty big margin. If he wanted to rally the country to go to war against al-Qaeda, he could have. He didn't.
Well,
we paid the price.
Well, first of all, al-Qaeda attacked us in 2000. That was the USS Cole.
They did. They attacked us in 1993. We know now that they attacked us in the first Trade Tower bombing.
Well, we know there were World Trade Center. I don't know that that we know that Osama bin Laden was behind that. I don't know. Jeff, do you have a response on that?
Yeah, it may not have been Osama bin Laden, but it was part of the same terrorist network. And Bill Clinton took the easy way out. This is you keep talking about the meetings he had every day. You know what? Meetings don't matter.
They do matter. They save thousands.
Now,
wait a minute.
Take any action.
They save hundreds. Okay, thanks very much for calling. Listen, Jeff, we got to close up here. I want to thank you very much for coming on my show. I appreciate the debate. As you know, I like to have the other side represented, and I want to thank you for coming on my maiden show.
Well, thanks very much for having me, Mark.
And I appreciate it very much. Folks, we've only got a few minutes left. I want to make a few final comments. Look, I think what we've seen here is that what the conservatives are doing is they're constantly blaming Bill Clinton, and that's their way of getting out of it. They're like, well, Bill Clinton did this, Bill Clinton did that. And yet I think it's a fair question. At this point, we have George W. Bush. He's president of the United States. He's running for... well, re-election, that assumes he was elected the first time, which those of us who know the law know he wasn't. He was selected by the Supreme Court. So I guess he's running for re-selection. And George W. Bush is saying that the war on terrorism is his greatest thing, that this is the thing that should make him president of the United States. Look, we know that on the economy, He's done a horrible job. We know that we have the worst recovery out of a recession since Herbert Hoover, and that's largely because tax cuts are going to extremely wealthy people who aren't the engines of the economy, that lower and middle class people are. So we know all that. And so he's saying, well, folks, I'm great in the war on terrorism. And what we're learning from Richard Clark yesterday, what we're learning from Paul O'Neill, is that George Bush wasn't focused on terrorism either before or, ironically, after 9/11. Before 9/11, for 8 months, the counterterrorism expert wanted to talk to George Bush, was not allowed in, wanted to talk to cabinet advisors, wanted to talk to Donald Rumsfeld, Colin Powell, was not given the time of day. George Bush was focused on things like missile defense. Condoleezza Rice was ignoring Sandy Berger's idea, Clinton's idea, to go after al-Qaeda. They ignored it. Again, only one personal meeting where Berger practically begged Condoleezza Rice to do something about al-Qaeda, she wasn't interested. So whatever you think about, I mean, this idea that we know George Bush, I mean, followed all these terrorist attacks, right? I mean, this idea that Bill Clinton, after the World Trade Center in 93, should have begun an incredible attack on Afghanistan, if that's right, folks, then Bush clearly should have done an attack, right? Because we had all the attacks, 93 and Copan Towers and USS Cole and all that stuff, and Bush was given a specific plan by Clinton. So I love the way the conservatives think. They say Clinton didn't do enough when he had a tiny piece of evidence that, and by the way, there's no evidence World Trade Center was related to al-Qaeda, and that now Bush, with all this extra evidence, shouldn't have done anything. The answer is this. The 9/11 Commission was chosen to find out what was going on, right? We have the 9/11 Commission, and this commission was asked for by the families. It was a law by Congress. And this commission needs to get to the bottom line. George Bush opposed this commission. He had something to hide. He did not want to talk to the commission. And he's been stonewalling the commission. He hasn't given them documents. He has said that, oh, if you want to get certain documents, then I'll allow two people on the commission to look at the documents, and then they can write a report that a few others can read, and then they can write a report that others can read. He said originally he was only going to talk with the commission for an hour. Bill Clinton, for all these attacks on Bill Clinton and Al Gore, by the way, have both said they will talk to the commission as long as it takes. They will go in there and talk as long as it takes. Bush now has said he'll talk to the commission, but Cheney won't, and Condoleezza Rice won't, and they won't talk in public either. I mean, there are ways to do this in public without giving away sources. What is Bush afraid of? And I think what he's afraid of is the stuff that we're going to find out in Richard Clark's book, and the stuff we're going to find out in Craig Unger's book, House of Bush, House of Saud. What we're finding is that the Bush administration only attacks countries that have oil. It's that simple. When Afghanistan attacked us, Bush decided to go after Iraq because Iraq had oil. And in fact, he wanted to go after Iraq first, but only after being told time and time again by Richard Clark and head of the CIA and head of the FBI and others that there really is no connection between Iraq and Osama bin Laden, that he say, all right, we'll go after Afghanistan first, and then we'll go after Iraq. Then we'll go after Iraq because Karl Rove says that we need the Americans to get all upset about a war. I think what we're finding out is that the war in Iraq was a big mistake. We've not only lost more than 500 American lives, we not only have 3,000 Americans wounded, and I mean seriously wounded, loss of legs, loss of limbs, but what have we gained for it? I mean, you heard Jeff. He hopes it'll become a democracy, and he hopes it will be friendly to America, but if the people vote for a country that's not friendly to America, he has no solution. It's not easy to go in and change a country, and it seems to me that if the country's going around committing genocide, as they did in Kosovo, then you got to go in. You got to stop it. There are reasons to oppose countries, even with that didn't attack us. But when you have a country like Iraq, I think you'll find this war really didn't solve anything. At the same time, it made a lot of countries mad at us. I got a caller who's going to have about 30 seconds. Caller, you got 30 seconds to say what you want.
Hi, this is Rob Cohen.
Hi, Rob. You really only have about 30 seconds because we're going to end the program in another minute, but go ahead, make your comment.
Oh, I think that what's happening today with the Bush reaction echo chamber going after a career government employee is just despicable.
I mean, that's what's interesting. I mean, Paul O'Neill's cabinet secretary, and now they're calling him a big liar. We have a counterterrorism expert who worked for four presidents, beginning with Ronald Reagan, and now they're going after his credibility. Maybe they should consider the fact that maybe it's the Bush administration that has no credibility and not these career employees.
Well, it's the people in the middle, the undecideds, who are going to do that. The rest, the ones who are totally committed to Bush, are blinded by, I don't know what. What do you think it is?
I think it's blind loyalty. I think it's they want a Republican in power for other reasons. Maybe they're anti-abortion, or maybe they want church in the schools. I don't know. And then they just decide they have to blindly support George Bush. That's my view, Rob. Listen, I hope you'll call another time. We don't have any more time for you. I'm sorry. The show's got to close. I want to tell you, everyone, I've really appreciated being on the air this Monday. As you know, I'm traditionally on Sundays, but I'm on every day this week. I'm live. We've got great shows coming up. Tomorrow is Election Tuesday. Now, every Tuesday from now until the election, we are going to focus on the election. We're going to focus on what John Kerry said, what George Bush said, charges, countercharges, back and forth. That's tomorrow. Here at 3 o'clock Eastern Time. Wednesday, we're going to talk about Republican spending with someone from the Cato Institute, and on and on and on. You know that on the Inside Scoop, that's where you get all the information from Washington that the government does not want you to know. This is Mark Levine signing off.